Welcome to Leadership Moments.
In every great leader's life, there are pivotal moments that shape their character, test their resilience, and awaken their vision.
Together, we'll uncover the invaluable lessons hidden within these transformative moments. Today, our guest is Ashley Duquet Kinsley. Ashley is the founder of Elma Health and an expert in the application of artificial intelligence for behavioral change. She has built and led international teams at Meta, Amazon, and Changing Health, where she's helped define, develop, and scale AI tech products across the globe. Ashley holds a degree in behavioral biology and master in communication, focused on behavior change from Johns Hopkins University. Today, we are going to talk about the ethics around AI and how to leverage research and support from others in building confidence and conviction to stand up for what you believe in. Let's jump in. Hi, Ashley. Thank you for being a guest on our show today. I'm really excited because when you and I have spoken, you have been in technology, specifically around the AI space, which is unusual for women, but also unusual for a lot of people that have been in technology just to be in AI. So I'd love for you to tell a little bit to our listeners on how you got into that and why behind it.
Yeah, sure. Thank you for having me. Excited to be here. Actually, it's funny, in university, I really wasn't into technology and I was never really even pushed to pursue technology as a career. I was certainly always into science and math. I studied science, a mix of neuroscience with psychology, etc. And then after graduating, was really focused more on behavior change and some fun stuff in there, but then moved into more technology strategy and was really blessed that my career took me and my interest in technology and behavior and all of those various pieces took me to Capital One, which is a very data intensive company for anyone who's aware of that. And then ultimately to Amazon and to Meta and some of the other players where I was really lucky to work on machine learning / artificial intelligence, really for the past 15 or so years in the data space up to most recently, even working with the large language models that are all the rave. But, you know, AI has been around for quite some time, all the way back to the 50s, actually. I haven't been quite that long, but yeah, I've been working in the space. It's been fascinating to watch it change. And then of course, with the advent, if you will, or the launch of ChatGPT, just seeing a bit of the frenzy that's happened because of that.
I think there's two things there. One, AI has been around for a long time, and a lot of people don't realize because generative AI has been so big recently, that's all people consider, but it has been around for a long time. Thank you for sharing that so our listeners can make sure that they understand what's been part of that. So how has that changed for you as a leader since you've been in AI for a while and now with Gen AI and dealing with a lot of the data as well?
Yeah, super fascinating. I think one of the things that I find most exciting yet also most concerning with the change and kind of the blow up, if you will, of AI is that lots of progress is happening. A lot more people are getting involved, but more on the periphery, right? On using some of the technology without all of the understanding of the implications underneath the technology. Certainly AI and technology in general has been a more homogeneous population of folks working on the technology. And as it expands and grows, models, like I said, have been around for a long time. Facebook, Meta, Google, Netflix, Spotify, all of those have been using AI for years and years. And you probably interacted with AI every day, I'm sure, before LLMs ever launched, but now it's really more top of mind, etc. But part of starting to use models and using AI, just like any technology, means that there's implications, whether it's bias in the data, whether it's unintended consequences that come from those technologies or from AI, that are really important. And so because it's being used more and more often, that exposes us to more and more potential, but also more and more possibility of things going awry.
Yeah. So let's talk about that a little bit, because I think this is on a lot of leaders' minds. They're losing sleep over it at night of how do I make sure that we're ethically responsible as a company, but also embracing the change in technology, because I believe, and I know other leaders believe, you have to embrace it in order to move your organization forward, or you're going to be left behind. So help me with that balance. What are things that you would tell leaders to consider when they think about ethics and how to move forward with that?
Yeah, it's funny because I was just chatting with someone earlier today. And one of the things that we were talking about, because this gentleman has been in an AI for a while too, is that AI is a technology tool. It's a tool, just like any other tool. You still have to start with a problem. So what problem are you trying to solve? And then you look at whether AI is the type of tool you should be using. And of course, just again, like any tool, there's consequences, pieces that come along with that. One of the things about AI is that it uses data. It uses historical data, and it's predicting things that you don't explicitly tell it, right? So you don't say 1 + 1 = 2 and we know it's 2. You say, okay, I've got a bunch of data. We've seen these behavior patterns in the past. What will the future behavior look like? You don't know exactly what that outcome is going to be. There's some guardrails you can put around it, but it's much more nebulous as far as it's not the black and white coding where you put in this code. And yes, of course, there's bugs and there's things that come up, but it's more linear. With AI, there are extrapolations. There are pieces of things that you can say, I want this, but you don't know exactly what that's going to look like or what the benefit, because you don't know every single piece of data that you're using to do that. You might not even know the patterns that are in the data. And the model identifies that. That's exciting, but that also means that there's things underneath that may come up. And just like I believe really with any team, any problem you're solving, it's really important to have diverse opinions, perspectives, as well as your end users involved in how you create that solution and really thinking about the consequences or the effects that may come out as a result of that. And so ethical principles, of course, you always want to have your guiding principles that are a part of your leadership, your company, et cetera. Those should still be applying to when you're building AI models, but there's things underneath that you need to be aware of. I think it's really important to have people who have worked on models prior, at least advising on how you're going to think about these, because there's things that you just don't know to think about. A lot of conversations I have with folks, they might be thinking about, okay, we're going to build this, and we're going to do this, or we're going to put this on top of it. And just because I've seen things in the wild that weren't intended, we launched models in one country, then launched them in another, they don't, you know, just work the same way in one country versus the other. Just creating what's called representative data samples doesn't actually remove bias. Like, there's all these different factors and things that you don't know that you don't know. And so if you have someone who has seen those that can try to help pull out some of those pieces, and then again, you've got a diverse team who can think of the different implications and diversity in all aspects of the world, in how they were educated and what their upbringings or different perspectives to be able to see those. I think with AI, it's even more important than previously that we have a multitude of folks thinking about the problem and addressing some of the things that might come up.
Yeah, those are really good points. And what I appreciate about that is the diverse perspectives. And sometimes those diverse perspectives are not only somebody that might be experienced in that field, but they could be experienced in completely something different. And they're just a fresh set of eyes that gives you that different view and different ideas and challenges your thinking. And sometimes we don't want that challenge, but we need that challenge to make sure we're implementing something correctly and thinking about it. Now that leads me to a lot of companies are very passionate about moving forward, and because they're concerned about falling behind. And that might put you in situations as a leader that whether it's the board, whether it's the CEO, the founder, pushing you to do something that maybe during your research you found this is really not the best thing for us for whatever reason. Are there recommendations that you can give our listeners of how they could go about really standing their ground for what's best for the organization?
Yeah. And well, and I would say best for society too, as addition to that, depending on what you're working on, your end users, our constituents are certainly stakeholders as well that don't always have a voice in the room. And that's part of your job as a leader to do that. I think in the pace of moving forward, especially if you're talking about a business that it doesn't have the same regulations, and certainly AI is just starting to get regulated in the EU. They passed law, but that it's not going to go into effect for another couple of years. So it's a very gray space, but it's still a space where we as leaders need to understand the implications and, like you said, have a clear voice. I've had challenges in the past, a couple in fact, that did not end the way that I would probably hope for, but that I feel confident that I stood my ground, was able to move the organization in a direction that I feel was more ethical, even though, you know, a bit at my own expense, which is fine. I would rather sleep at night and know that I was able to move things in society forward in the right direction. I think one of the important parts there, again, is making sure that you're getting a broad perspective and bringing forward examples of, hey, here's where we've seen this in the past. Here's where this has happened. And there are enough examples in AI where you can point to both previously as well as even what's happening now. I'm sure we've all seen some of the blunders in the news. There was one, like the airline had the bot, and they had to adhere to what the bot had said for some sort of refund. There's other ones. Amazon had a hiring algorithm that they had to end up not using because it was, even though they didn't realize, right, there was an underlying bias against women because of the universities that they were going at. And again, these are not people who are intending to build something that's biased. It's the data is biased, and there's underlying things and consequences. And so doing your research, making sure that you're getting that perspective of other folks who've been in the space, bringing evidence. It doesn't mean that you don't trial things, and it doesn't mean that you're not moving forward, but understanding that there are things that are going to come up as a consequence of using any technology, but AI in particular, because of the lack of understanding we have of the kind of functioning, similar to our brains, of the nuance of the functioning of how they're working. So bringing together those pieces to present a case, and again, presenting it as a, here are the things we can look at. Here's how we've seen this in the past. Here's how we can approach the problem in a different way, whether it's launching in a small sense, bringing in these different perspectives and voices into how to actually create the technology, the systems, et cetera. There's a lot of pressure to move forward, but there's also a lot of fear. And I think helping the board, helping investors, helping leaders understand that this, it's important to do this intentionally and with delicacy while still trying and using some of the bottoms up excitement and input as well.
You said so much in there that I love, and I want to get back to a couple pieces. The first thing I want to ask is, you talk about the trial piece, because there's a lot of people that are like, oh, we're just going to wait and see, let somebody else fail, we'll learn from them, and then we'll move forward. And then there's other organizations that we say are on the bleeding edge that want to push forward and see what's happened. If I'm a board member or a CEO, and I myself am trying to really understand AI, I know we need to move forward, and I get the CIO that comes to me and says, hey, we need to trial this. What are some good questions that board member or CEO could ask to be able to get some clarity to make sure that we're moving forward in a safe and ethical manner?
Yeah, great question. So definitely understand, going back to like, what's the problem we're trying to solve? So are we using this technology because it's actually solving a problem that we need to solve? Have we brought in stakeholders who are impacted by the technology? What are their perspectives? How do they see this as a benefit? How do they see this, you know, the concerns? What are the protective guardrails we're putting around this? As a board member, I'd say get someone in there who is an AI expert, who's an AI ethicist, or someone who's actually deployed these, like I said before, and have them ask some of those more nuanced questions about the data. Do you have rights to use the data the way that you're using it? What kind of privacy do you have in place? Especially if you're an international company, you know, depending on what type of data you're using, even manipulating the data to make it anonymized requires some level of approval at least under GDPR. And so really understanding, are users aware of how we're using this? What would the implications be if something went off track? What can we do to try to ensure that that isn't the case? And then also, like, what are we learning from testing this? Like, how is this moving us forward in our long-term vision? And like, what incrementally will this teach us so we can use those findings as we continue down the road? And again, really making sure that the team you have around it has a variety of different perspectives to bring to bear. One of the things that I like to do on my teams is have someone play devil's advocate. Not every meeting, but if we're having a meeting where we're discussing product pieces, if we're discussing taking this route versus this route, making sure that you're getting past the groupthink and you're allowing for people to have different voices, different opinions. When someone's tasked with doing that and really seeing the contrarian view, sometimes that's actually saying, but are we missing the positives, right? So it's not always being negative by any means, but really playing that devil's advocate to drill in, making sure that you're capturing what assumptions you're labeling, et cetera, but really putting the responsibility of that role on someone in meetings and rotating it. So it's not always actually being Debbie Downer. Sorry, Debbie's in the world, but like helping with that piece. And so doing that too, just putting those structures in place, the diversity, the ways that you're really asking the right questions. And then again, making sure that your outcomes are crystal clear as what you're doing and you have the boundaries around that.
I love being intentional and having someone be the role player. We talk about wearing many hats as leaders and having your team members put on the hat of being the person that's challenging us and making sure we're getting to the right decision. And I always tell people, if everyone's nodding their head in the meeting, you do not have the right people in that meeting. Totally. You need people challenging you. You need people asking those tough questions because that's how you're going to get to the best answer. So I'm so thankful that you added that. I think that's a great add. The other piece that I love that you said, and I just want to reiterate it because I think it's so important. If companies are not looking at adding an AI person to their board, they are missing out. It is a mistake. This is the next generation. This is the way organizations are going to move forward. We know that. The timing is probably the question, but the timing to add an AI knowledgeable person to your board is now. So definitely. I'm so glad that you added that. Really good points.
And that is also a place where you can, even if you're not looking now, it's like that future, right? Like getting to know the business, understanding the outcomes, understanding how to drive towards that and keeping up with everything that's changing and using that person that way too.
Really good points. Now you said something a few minutes ago. I'm going to ask a little bit and share whatever you're comfortable with, but I think it's so important. You talked about standing up for what you believed in ethics, and you have an experience that it did not turn out good for you, but you can sleep at night. And that is the most important thing, to be able to do that. So first of all, I just want to pause and say kudos to you. Congratulations for standing up for what you do. I actually was in a conversation with someone just yesterday that said they were in a meeting with multiple people and there was a leader acting not in a positive manner and no one felt comfortable to stand up to that leader. And how awful that was, that they didn't have a safe space to be able to do that. So it's not just around AI and ethics. It happens to us as leaders all the time, that how do we feel comfortable to stand up and not sacrifice because we're worried about our job? What does this mean for my future promotion? There's a lot of things going through our head. Is there any guidance or anything you are willing to share if you want to share the story or any guidance, particular things that someone could think about when they're in those situations that they know I need to stand up for what I believe in so I can sleep at night or not be in this environment that I'm currently in at the moment that you would recommend for leaders to think about?
Yeah, definitely. One of the things that's important is taking stock of the environment, like the patterns in the environment. For instance, with the person you were talking about, you know, was this person having a bad day? Was it a one-off? Is it something, of course, egregious behavior needs to be addressed? Period, right? But if, you know, if they're a little grumpy or whatever it may be, you know, looking at the patterns in the environment and saying to yourself, okay, is this a thread that I see that I really feel strongly that I need to address? Is this a problem that others who you respect, who you know well, who also know the organization, who may know the players, who may know the dynamics, hopefully you have a couple people that are confidants. It doesn't mean that they're even your same group, but maybe extended. And I was really blessed at this, that I had some really, really strong peers who I could go to and say, this is what I'm seeing, this is what I'm feeling. It feels like these similar people who come from the same background, similar things, are not seeing something because they're blinded by the fact that they are all in the same in-group, if you will, right? And they could then say to me, okay, well, have you thought about this? Have you thought about that? Certainly my mom is a mentor of mine, my faith. So really going to that and saying, okay, let me make sure that this isn't my response. Let me make sure that this isn't coming from my past or something that I feel is an issue with me. Let me make sure that this is something valid. Let me substantiate it based on what I'm seeing in a couple different spaces. So what I did was we talked with a bunch of different experts. It was in a space in community integrity is what it's called, so we're trying to reduce harm. And it was in a prioritization space. And so there were a multitude of different options and none of them were bad necessarily, but I felt that they were allocating and ignoring some very obvious bad things because of blinders. And so made sure to do a lot of research, talk to other areas, and then presented a case, not blaming, of course, not calling out their blame, but presenting why it was important and why they were missing these pieces. And felt very confident based on the fact that I've done a lot of research, not just my own, but other people being in the space, and felt conviction that this is something that matters. It matters to the users. It matters to the long-term health of the business. And quite honestly, if it doesn't matter to the bottom line and there's harm being done, I don't care. I care about the harm being done. And that's what's important to me. And really, that was my role anyway within the company. And so I think it's making sure, taking that stock, making sure, okay, let me make sure this is valid. Let me make sure I'm playing this off of people I really trust and who understand. Let me do my research. Certainly, again, this is not about coaching someone on a conversation that they had. This is about something that is very impactful and meaningful and potentially is going to put you in a place that puts you against leadership. This went all the way up to the CEO and what I was presenting back. And ultimately then having to say, okay, this is clearly what I've found. This is clearly important. And then when they chose to get rid of me because they didn't agree with that, that's the choice that I feel I was called to make. And I feel confident. I do know that subsequently they made changes based on what I had recommended. So I can also feel, and even if they hadn't, that's ultimately, that's their choice, right? I have to live with the choices that I made. And I can feel comfortable knowing that I made those recommendations and I feel confident in those recommendations.
That's fabulous. First of all, I just have to pause and say, congratulations. You stood up for what you believed in. That is so hard to do when you work so hard for your career and you get to a certain level that you get that opportunity to speak and work with C-level executives. It is really hard to go against their beliefs and try to show them. It wasn't that you were against them. It was that you felt differently because of the research that you saw. And I think that's the important piece for our leaders to listen to and think about is, it's not that you're against that person. It's that your view and your perspective is different. And sharing that difference goes back to that diversity that you first spoke about. And that's what's so important. And ultimately, they can make their decision, but now they make a more well-informed decision by hearing the other ideas.
And if I may, I think one of the things that, having studied neuroscience and behavioral change and behavioral biology, one of the things that I think is really important that we understand as leaders is our perspective is our perspective. It is narrow, not because there's anything wrong with us, not because we're faulted, but because we're human. And so if we don't seek out diversity and different perspectives, we're creating an environment, a world, our own mind, our own reality that is so narrow and purely based on what we know. And that's not enriched. And that's not the best way to move forward. Again, that doesn't mean it's wrong. It means we're humans. And that's literally how our brains work. So in order to help us be better, move towards better, hopefully have bigger perspectives and bigger understanding and empathy, et cetera, it's really making sure that both we understand our own shortcomings, as well as getting those other perspectives, even when they're hard,
Yeah, that's wonderful. I do a lot of work in emotional intelligence, and we work on that a lot about how you have the thinking brain and the emotional brain, and the emotions kick in as well. And part of that is your experience and what happens. And you're right, it's natural. So we have to be intentional to put ourselves in what would feel uncomfortable because we're inviting people in that are not like us or haven't experienced what we have experienced and don't think like us. But the reality is you will be better, your team will be better, your organization will be better if you bring in that different perspective. So you need to get uncomfortable to have a great team and a great organization. So I love the science behind that. And I know you have lots of education and experience around it. So thank you for sharing that.
No, it's great to hear that you work on that too. It's so important.
It is. All right. So you said a couple things earlier. And one thing that I would like to talk about is when you spoke about, hey, I need to bring in the stakeholders. You have a lot of experience on the product side. And if you've worked with product people or been in the product space, they are your first thought, your clients, your stakeholders, however you want to label them, you put them first. But it's not natural for other leaders that maybe have not worked in that space or worked with other people. And so if I'm putting something together and I'm getting ready to put it to the board, and now I know from you that the board is probably going to ask me, have you brought in the stakeholders? Have you gotten their opinion? So what do I do as a leader? What's the best way to bring stakeholders in to make sure I'm doing that the right way?
So I'm a huge believer, as you can imagine, as with my background, in continuous research and hypothesis testing, et cetera. Of course, at Johns Hopkins, you can't get past without knowing all about hypothesis testing and research, but research also into your users, the environment. So a lot of times, especially if you come from like the business side, there's market research, which of course is incredibly important. But user research should be continuous. I was just telling someone this recently. When my team would come to me and say, okay, this, this, and this, and they would say, what do you think? I would often say, and I have a funny example of this at Amazon, it doesn't really matter what I think. Yes, of course, I have my wisdom. I have my experience. I hope I have some wisdom. I have my experience, like my brain. But ultimately, if I like it, but I'm not the end user, or even if I'm one end user and I'm an anomaly, because we're all anomalies, compared to the normal end users, it doesn't matter what I think. It really matters what the users think. So having a team, having someone who's constantly talking to users, not just reading feedback, which of course is really important too, understanding if it's a SaaS company, what are your salespeople hearing? If you're B2B to C or you're B2B to an actual end user, not the business who's purchasing, what are the actual users saying? A lot of times, we say like, oh, but this either so-and-so said this, or the person who's purchasing said this. Okay, that's good input, but like, what did the person who's actually using the system say? And use that, ask your team when they're presenting. One of the things I did at my last role as CPO, CTO, was at our meeting, every single weekly meeting, we would discuss, what did we hear from customers this week? What did we hear from end users? So we had an agenda, a standing agenda item, that was, what is the user feedback that we're hearing? And that didn't always come from our research team. That could come from sales, customer support, anyone. Let's share with the entire team, what are those end users saying? So talk to them. When I was working at Capital One, I was in the branches. My users were actually tellers and, well, the end customers as well too. But like, what are the tellers telling you? There's that fun undercover boss and like some of the others. Like, go be a leader that is seen in your space. Really understand what people are saying. What are their real problems? Not just what we're proposing to solve, which of course is important too, but like, how do they talk about it? And then make that something that you're constantly presenting. So I'm on a couple boards. I love hearing from I'm on the Hopkins, at Johns Hopkins, I'm on the boards. I want to hear, what are the students saying? I love when they come and talk to us and they sit in and say, this is what I'm experiencing. I think your board will probably appreciate that too. So bring those stories. Everybody loves a story. Bring that to life.
That's wonderful. I love the intentionality. It's a standing agenda item. We ask information from everyone. The other thing that I have done in the past as well is I've actually forced my team members. When I say forced, I make it a requirement and say, you must go shadow the business. You must go spend X amount of hours X amount of weeks or days or months,
yep,
and actually just sit with them and see how they're mm-hmm. working, understand their role. And these are typically for positions that are not on the client facing side,
right,
but working and shadowing with the client facing team members
yep.
and seeing what they're experiencing, because you're also experiencing the team members' view too. And then we've mm-hmm. had people that have actually contacted our clients and said, hey, can I watch from your end? How was your experience? Mm-hmm. What was it like? And I know that's a yeah. lot of what product does. So just to give some additional ideas, but I love having it as a standing
yeah, no,
agenda
I love
item
that.
And making it open for all organizations to talk about it.
Yeah.
Great. All right. I could talk to you all day about AI and things that you've seen and stuff like that, because I love your thinking, but we only have so much time. So I want to give you space with your passion around ethics and diversity and making sure that clients and stakeholders are heard and what's important. Is there anything that you would like to share with our leaders for them to think about, know about moving forward?
Wow, great question. I think the space, what we talked a lot about, the space to hear from end users, the space to hear from diverse perspectives, and really the curiosity and openness. Because when things are changing at this pace, I mean, I love to read, but I could spend all day listening to podcasts and reading, like all day, and I would still only have like the surface, right? So relying on that collective knowledge, relying on the end users, the experts, et cetera, to help guide you along. Most great leaders are surrounded by great people. That's what makes us great. It's not just because we're great. It's because all the amazing people around us. And really being intentional, even when it's harder to hire and to have diverse around you. I'm very passionate about diversity and women in tech, et cetera. I actually hired a man on my team when I was at Amazon because I needed a diverse team. There were three of us that were women. One in particular who was very similar to me, which I know is like an inherent bias. I'd worked with her before. So it was like I've kind of inherited her and pulled her along. But I'm representing global sellers. I did have international. I did have like good gender bias in my tech team and my AI team and all that good stuff. But I was like, I need a man on my team. And of course, I looked at all kinds of different profiles, et cetera. I wasn't just narrowing it, but I felt it was really important. And also to have a different background, someone coming from, so I come from more the math and science. We had a big tech team. I didn't need more math and science. I needed someone who had more of a business background, who really understood the sellers and who could still fill the roles of the team, but like be intentional. And yes, it might take longer. And I know everyone says it's hard, but train someone up. This person that I hired had never been in product before, and I helped them into product, and they're a product rock star now. Same thing with the other one. You can look at their strengths. What are they good at? And you can help them learn some of those skills, but give the person that looks, that sounds, that thinks differently the chance to be on the team, to fill that role, to grow them up into what you need for the sake of really moving your organization forward, making sure your AI is diverse and that it's addressing a multitude of different problems. Yes, it is harder sometimes, but it's so important. And there's so many statistics that show that diverse teams way outperform. We don't need to quote all them all. But so I just think that's so, so important, especially in this world that is changing so quickly that we can't rely on our own knowledge or our own narrow myopic view. We have to make sure that we're surrounding ourselves with all different perspectives and knowledge levels and expertise in a variety of different things.
Yeah, you're speaking from the heart, because I do a workshop around leadership core principles. And one of my core principles is seek out and embrace different thinking. And it is exactly that you have to build the team. And if you don't have the team, then you bring other people in on other teams while you're working through an initiative or something just to get that different thinking when you can't. I believe in interview hard, lead easy. So yes, it may take longer to find that right individual, but that's the short term. In consideration, when you hire someone, it's a year's commitment. Hopefully that person works out and they elevate and they're in that team for a long time. So that's a short pain to be able to make sure you get the right team. So very similar to the type of thinking.
And now with AI, they're actually showing that people can upskill faster and like some of those more nuanced specialties, if you will, can be augmented. So even more, that should really open up for people who don't have the quote unquote exact background to be able to fill those spaces.
That's a great way to look at it, because there's so many people that are scared of, I'm going to lose my job. I don't need this. I actually saw an article the other day that more Gen Z and alphas are looking at going into trades because they're concerned about more professional jobs are not as secure because of AI. But the reality is the AI can help level you up in a different industry or skill that you haven't had before. So I love that view from it. All right, well, here's that sound. It is time for us to ask the fun questions. Are you ready for the fun questions?
I'm ready.
All right. The first question is, what is your favorite sound?
Okay, so I didn't say I live in Barcelona. That's another thing to expand your mind, living in a foreign country, for sure. And I love the sound of the ocean. I feel really connected to God. I feel like peace. I love it.
Yeah, that's beautiful. Beautiful. Definitely those sounds that kind of give you that sense of calm, connection. Mm-hmm. I love that. All right, next question. What is your favorite family tradition?
So I grew up in the early 80s. I don't even remember. I don't think we had like a black and white TV when I was younger, which is probably why I don't own a TV now. So we loved board games, also puzzles, but really would have a game night, you know, where we played the board game. Sometimes our neighbors would come over. We'd have popcorn. I still love my popcorn. And yeah, it was just so fun to, you know, be a little bit nerdy, play games, always positive, laugh, tell funny stories, etc. But I loved those. Yeah, those. What a wholesome American pastime.
Yeah, and for our listeners to know, so Ashley, you grew up in the States.
I did.
Live in Barcelona now. Yes. I think you've been at some other countries before. In between as yep. well, right?
yep. But yeah, I grew up in Minnesota. So like cold winters with some warm popcorn and some board games.
And what's one of your favorite board games?
Yahtzee.
That is a family favorite. Yes, that's a good one.
for sure. And such a fun name.
Well, and I love that you said it like the commercial and like when you're playing it too. You can't just say Yahtzee. You have to say it with the two.
for sure. Like you're winning.
Right. Ashley, thank you so much for your time today. I know mm-hmm. our listeners are walking away with some great nuggets for them to implement in their roles every day. If anyone wanted to get in touch with you, how could they get in touch with you?
Yeah, LinkedIn's the best. You just put in Ashley Duque Kinsley and I'll come up. You'll see my picture with my dog. Feel free to connect and write there. I love problem solving and working on the AI stuff. So always happy to connect it for anything, but in particular, I love that stuff. So
love it. Well, thank you. I got some great takeaways. I think if I had to sum it up, it's embrace diversity, seek it out, make sure you're being intentional about bringing other people in, such as stakeholders and other teams, and then stand up for what you believe in. It's just a view. It's not saying that somebody's wrong. It is your perspective, and it's important to share that so everyone has all the information to make the best decision possible. Thank you so much for today. Really appreciate it.
Thank you, Stacey. Have a great rest of the day.
And that concludes another episode of Leadership Moments. We hope you found inspiration and valuable insights in what we shared today. Remember, leadership is not defined solely by titles or positions, but by the choices we make and the moments that shape us.
Embrace the challenges that come your way. They may be the very moments that propel you toward greatness. We'd love to hear your thoughts and stories as well. Connect with us on our website at leadershipmomentspodcast.com or through social media on Instagram at @tap_bethegamechanger.
And @StaceyCaster_. Remember, your leadership moment could be just around the corner waiting for you to seize it. This is Stacey Caster, and what doesn't challenge you won't change you.
This is Tracy Ann Palmer, and be the change you wish to see in the world.